The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm here with Matt, Doug, and Terry. Red Sox drop game one against Baltimore, 4-2, your final score. Connelly early taking the loss in this one, but the bigger story, once again, is that the Red Sox offense falls flat at Fenway Park. So welcome into the show, everybody. Again, just a frustrating loss, 4-2, your final. Red Sox offense, after scoring 21 runs over the weekend, comes back to Fenway and can only manage two runs against Baltimore. So we'll get to the offense in a little bit, but let's start off with Connelly early. Not his sharpest start, not the worst thing we've ever seen, but four runs, six Ks, went pretty deep into the game, but ultimately just not a great performance from him. Matt, I'll start with you. How'd you feel about Early's performance tonight?
Yeah, definitely not his best performance of the year, but you know, compared to his bar, which is pretty high, still not a bad outing overall. I mean, it was a grind from the very beginning. This is a good lineup. He got in trouble early, right? First count, full count to the first two hitters, but then in true early fashion, gets out of a jam with two on and nobody out. Both of those guys in scoring position, but it was a grind and a battle that whole way, right? Then we get a 1-0 lead. He gives it right back, first batter of the second inning. Finds a way to calm down, and then the third inning got away from him a little bit. They were just he hung some changeups there. I think Rutschman was all over that one. He drove one to center field. It was 101 plus off the bat, and then you know Alonso, you just knew that guy was going to hit at least. You knew he was going to get to us this series. So now he'll probably go deep multiple times this series. But yeah, he put one in the seats, and you know Early continued to grind. A lot of pitches through the first two innings, too, almost 50 pitches to get out of those first two. So you knew it was going to be a pretty short outing, but he had a pretty quick inning after that. And then, you know, the Orioles played some pretty good small ball. They got that fourth run in the fourth inning. And I wrote in my notes that, you know, it's a 3-run lead. And that's basically insurmountable for this team at that point. And that was all the scoring that the Orioles needed. But, you know, at least just a quick thought on the pitching in general. Early battled. He didn't have a terrible line. He kept us in it, gave us a chance to win despite all the pitches the Orioles made him throw. But I got to give a little bit of a quick shout out to Weissert and Samaniego, who did go 3 2/3 shutout in the inning to close out the game in the bullpen, too, which, like I said, kept us in it, gave us a chance to win. But the offense continues to be anemic at home.
Yeah. Early pitched good. Yeah, he pitched good enough to win. Like you said, that's a good enough game to win. We talk a lot about that he gets a lot of guys on bases and he keeps his poise. He gets out of it. He kind of just wasn't getting out of it this game. Those runs, when he was in trouble, it kind of bit him this time, which, you know, I think we knew would come. It's going to happen. But he pitched good enough to win on a normal offensive team. Four runs, you know, he went on five and a third, and he didn't look as sharp as stuff. His swing and misses wasn't as much. He still had some Ks, but he obviously didn't have his best game, his best stuff tonight. But yeah, in the bullpen, you know, really, like you said, Matt, just kept us in it, which is all we need them to do, right? It's all you ask them to do. They really look good. Weissert had a real good seventh, and I thought, you know, they give us a chance. You go into the ninth down two, you know, there's a chance. But with this team, it just feels like you said, insurmountable when it gets to three. And it must be a lot of pressure on the pitches knowing, you know, you have to be basically perfect two runs the most. You know, you let up four, you feel like you let the team down because now there's no chance of them winning. You know, so it's a lot of pressure on a young kid. But, you know, I think we're all still behind him. He didn't have his best start tonight, but his best start still is a pretty good start.
You know, it just seemed like the Orioles do a good job being prepared for the opposing pitcher. And right away, it was evident that they weren't going to chase. So you got a lot of deep counts. And they made early pitch to them. And two balls ended up in the monster seats. So I think that was part of it. Having said that, I mean, I thought Early was very well poised throughout the night. He, as Matt was basically saying, he had that Houdini act. Runners on second and third, nobody out, and he got out of it. And, you know, it's nice to see that. And I think he just, I keep mentioning chess matches. And, you know, he kind of lost the chess match tonight. You know, he wasn't overmatched. You know, he didn't make a lot of mistakes, but the other team was just a little bit better. And, you know, and that's what happened. I would still say, gun to my head right now, he's still the ace of the Boston Red Sox. And, you know, tonight, based on where his bar normally is, I mean, this probably wasn't the greatest start, but you would take this start every time from Brian Baio, you know, and, you know, I'm not discouraged. This Baltimore team, I'll tell you what, if they add some pitching here and if they can kind of get a little bit ahead of the market and add it, you know, much sooner than the deadline, that's an interesting team. You know, Alonso made us pay. And I think the Nesson cameras kind of blew a golden opportunity to pan to Breslow as soon as that ball went into the monster seats. Could have had this guy. It's not like he got a Soto contract. I mean, it was the, if you wanted Pete Alonso, he would have been wearing your uniform. And, you know, he probably put Breslow one step closer to being fired. You know, it was 3-1 at that point, I think. And I don't know. That's the type of lead that just kind of feels insurmountable. But anyway.
Yeah, it was the game-winning home run. And to your point, Terry, I just want to comment that on the radio broadcast, because I was walking the dog listening to the first inning, and they talked about how great Alonso hits at Fenway. And you're thinking, oh, these are some, you know, kind of backhand compliments here to Alonso / shade to the Red Sox front office for swinging, missing on him, pun intended on that one, of course. But yeah, I mean, he one swing of the bat put up just as many runs as we did. So that's the type of offense that we could use on this team a lot, right? And if you think about it, if you just switch that one player, we probably win that game, obviously by what he did. But just one last thought on Early, and I'm not sure how many of these were on him, but I guess three of them must have came in that first inning. The Orioles were 1-for-6 with runners in scoring position. So this one could have got out of hand pretty quickly in the first inning or later on. So I think most of that was Early getting out of jams. But again, the pitching staff kept him in it, and, you know, the offense fell short. But Alonso, certainly a little bittersweet irony there with his performance tonight.
Just real quick before I kick it to Jason, you know, I'm mentioning if they get pitching, this is going to be a dangerous team. You have Alonso, you've got Henderson. They're doing a better job developing the kids with Kobe Mayo, who golfed one tonight. Basayo, who's like a spitting image of Devers, you know, just this stocky left-handed hitter that could just muscle the ball. And, you know, it's just a very well dynamic offense. That has been pitching starved. I mean, Boz has figured it out the last few starts. I forget who's going tomorrow, but he's had a few good starts when I was looking at that one. You've got the sidearm guy on Thursday. Who is it?
Rogers Thursday and Bassett tomorrow, from the Blue Jays, plenty familiar with us.
Right. And Rogers was ironically the 17-1 game that Cora got fired. So anyway, I'm just impressed with Baltimore. And if they add some pitching, I think the division gets even more interesting.
Yeah, this was far from Connelly Early's worst start. I mean, you know, I think, Terry, to your point, Baltimore, they were not going to chase the soft stuff, right? So that's where he got into trouble. He was hoping to get them to chase. They weren't abiding by it. And then he didn't want to, you know, start walking guys, putting guys on base. So he started putting those balls a little bit more in the strike zone. And a lot of those Baltimore hitters, you know, they're going to capitalize on that, especially the power guys, right? Mayo, Alonso, that's what they're waiting for. They're waiting for you to put it a little more in the zone so they can smack it over the monster, which they did. So, yeah, it's frustrating because, you know, people are going to say, well, you know, he gave up four runs and he's kind of all over the place. But this game is not on Connelly Early. I mean, four runs, you know, you're down by two going into the ninth. Like, that should not feel as insurmountable as it felt. Going into that ninth inning, my wife was asking me, she's like, oh, are you going to jump on the podcast? And I was like, yeah, this will take about 3 minutes because it's just, that's how it feels with this offense. Like, yeah, that's just going to be three up, three down. They're going to go down, you know, very meekly. And, you know, guys like Connelly Early, they're having these starts wasted because the offense that, again, as I pointed out at the start of the show, 21 runs in Cleveland over the weekend against a pretty good Guardians team that's got a pretty good pitching staff. And then for whatever reason, they get back to Fenway and it's just, they just can't do it. They can't score in what is a hitter-friendly ballpark. So it's all out of whack. They perform better on the road. They suck at Fenway. And they're going up against a Baltimore team that, you know, Shane Boz is okay. He's been pitching better lately. And for some reason, he's got something on the Red Sox because he always pitches well against them. But that's a guy that you should be able to beat. You know, your lineup's not that bad. You should be able to get to Shane Boz. And he looked untouchable tonight at times. I mean, really, if you think about it, the runs that the Red Sox scored, I mean, that triple by Duran was kind of a fake triple, for being honest. If the left fielder just kind of gets in front of that ball instead of trying to dive for it, Duran's not getting on to third base, right? So it's like every run they score has to be a gift, and then they just can't manufacture enough offense. I mean, I saw someone in the comments complaining about Abreu, and I'm glad they brought it up because he had an opportunity there. You got a runner on base, you're down by two. Willy Abreu hasn't hit a home run since May 8th. And I wanted to look at his game logs. I thought it had been a long time since he hit just an extra base hit in general, but he had a couple of doubles over the weekend, so that made up for it. But, you know, he's starting to become a bit of an issue here. Like, the batting average looks good. The glove is obviously still great, but he's not hitting for power. You know, he's been sitting on six home runs for a long time here. And the fact that it's kind of reversed that now he's actually struggling more against right-handers is kind of concerning to me. Like, what mechanically are they doing with him that's causing that? Because Marloni brought it up. He's starting to hit better against lefties. He's shortening his swing against lefties. And against righties, it's like he's trying to do too much and it's not working. So frustrating for Connelly Early because this offense just is brutal to watch, especially at Fenway Park, and that should not be the case.
Yeah, I mean, the difference in the game was Baltimore had two home runs. We had two sac flies. That's basically the story of the whole season.
In the first 2 weeks of May, Abreu drew 10 walks. In the last 2 weeks, he's only drawn three. You know, he's really fallen off, as you said, just kind of diving into the numbers here. Last 2 weeks, he's hitting .222 with a .254 on base, hence the three walks. Slugging is only .317. And even before he seemed to solve the problem with lefties, I mean, he's been a streaky hitter. Not like this is the bar I always use, but not Jackie Bradley painfully streaky, but he is streaky. So, you know, it hasn't changed. And when you have a lineup that's not very dynamic, when we're celebrating Mickey Gasper for all the wrong reasons, you know, you need a guy like Abreu to step up, and he hasn't. One guy who has been stepping up is Jaron Duran, despite the fake triple.
Yeah, big time.
It's a bit of a power outage with Abreu, and it is a little – perplexing. As streaky as he's been, it's weird because he's hitting or was hitting a little over 400 versus lefties, but not a lot of power on those. A lot of just kind of opposite field singles, which is good going with the pitch. We like to see that. But it feels like that game in the rain was versus the Twins a few weeks ago where he hit the – he almost hit it out and, it was, you know, it's out of almost every other ballpark except that one. It feels like maybe that's in his head or something, because ever since that, I feel like I haven't seen him hit a ball hard since that swing when the whole camera crew and Ness in the whole ballpark thought it was gone, but it was just a long, loud out. And on top of that, the two sack flies, one of those was – due to a pass ball, right? Gasper, I'd love to clown him all day, but he has been one of the lone bright spots in the lineup. And, you know, he was on base to lead off the inning twice tonight. And one of those leadoff singles, then the next pitch was a pass ball. Now he's in scoring position. And then two kind of sack flies run, move him over to manufacture that run. But just once again, not enough. We went through the numbers during their last home game, and it was 3.21 runs at home at Fenway, which is just unacceptable. Obviously tonight only put up a two spot. That one's going to go down a little bit. It's really frustrating and an on brand game for the 2026 Red Sox.
Yeah. The left side of your infield is really letting you down this season. I mean, really your offense is being carried by your three outfielders. It's Duran, Rafaela, and Abreu. Even though he's not hitting for power, he's at least getting on base, hitting some singles, you know. Rafael has been a different hitter this year, but he still can be very streaky. And even Jaron Duran, you know, we say it all the time, this team goes as Duran goes. And yeah, he had that triple early on, but then three strikeouts his next three at-bats. I mean, just – and whiffing badly, too. I mean, looking completely fooled up there. So that's kind of how the night went. Duran, you know, couldn't get it going from the top of the order. And, you know, your bottom half hitters – yeah, Durbin had a nice double tonight, but – he also, you know, his at bat later in the game, I mean, three straight sweepers to him, like the same exact pitch. He let one go right down the middle. He let one go that was in the strike zone and then lunges at one that's outside the strike zone and grounds out. And you saw more of that as the night went on. Sadon had a similar thing. He had an at bat where first pitch right down the middle and he just stares at it. Next pitch, it's a fastball at his ankles and he's swinging away. I mean, they were doing it all night. Duran was the worst offender. Duran looked at two straight right down the middle and struck out. So their hitting approach still is complete garbage. That, you know, they're patient when they shouldn't be, and they're swinging at pitches outside the strike zone. The whole hitting plan is not working. And when you've got a lineup like this with streaky hitters and young guys who are still trying to figure it out, it makes it even worse.
Yeah, after that first inning, just to piggyback on the Jaron Duran stuff, obviously he had a good hit in the first inning, an extra base hit, but three Ks after that on some non-competitive check swings. And really after that hit, Baz really settled in. I think he had three straight 1-2-3 innings and didn't really give up a hit until that leadoff single for Gasper in the fifth. So he really got in a groove and, you know, he's just one of those guys that seems to feast on a young lineup like the Sox have. It feels like when he goes to play against some of the bigger teams in the division or in the league, he gets lit up a little bit, hence his numbers coming into tonight. But whenever he faces the Red Sox, which over the past several years they've been a young club, he's just able to deal. He's able to locate with velocity and then hit him with the off-speed pitch, and they really just seem to can't keep up with him.
Just in the last week, I mean, he's hit four home runs, struck out 12 times. That is significant, three of those tonight. But, you know, hitting 375 with a 813 slugging is just kind of off the charts. And, you know, we've tried to put him in trades all, you know, going back as far as November, really. But if you're gonna contend at this point, like, and that's what Breslow's saying, you know, so based on that, I don't think you can trade him if you're contending. You can trade him in July if you're selling, but you need what he's giving you and then another bat. You can't trade him anymore.
Right. I mean, if we're contending, then you have to be buyers. Right? I mean, that's the theory.
Right.
So, I mean, and, right. So, and you can't, it's if you're going to get rid of your best player, then whatever move you make is just going to be a lateral move at best.
And you know, when he gets to another team that's not a driveline team, he's going to go off and we're just going to look stupid.
Yeah, just I think as long as Roman Anthony's out, we're not going to see a Durant move. They just need him too much right now. As bad as the offense has been this year, just imagine where we'd be without this guy, right? He has been, once again, the spark plug and the engine for this sputtering offense, albeit. But let's face it, Craig's, you know what, is on the line here, and he has to say we're contenders. I think even if it is the smart and right baseball move to sell right now, a guy in his position almost can't sell and concede defeat this early in the season. And so I don't know if he finds a way to buy, but I think he's going to continue talking the talk for sure and thinking that he believes in the team. I mean, you mentioned Durbin earlier. That was his he's got a 5-game extra base hitting streak, which, you know, under any other circumstances, you would say, oh, that's really nice. But I think at this point, it's just a little bit too late for him and for this offense. You love to see him getting going a little bit. But you know, out of the 9-hole, when then Durant just to come up and strike out right after, they're not really complimentary. They're not playing complimentary baseball, whether it be on offense or defense, certainly not in base running, but.
Yeah. I mean, despite everything, the Red Sox are still 3.5 out of a wild card spot. The American League has not, like, it's still a jumbled mess. They are contenders just for the simple fact of the American League is allowing them to be contenders. If they win 3 out of 4, they're right there. And the teams that are ahead of them, I mean, I don't believe in all of them. Do we really believe the White Sox are going to be this good all year? I doubt it. So there's going to be some regression to the mean, and that's where a door can open up. So I agree. Like, I think they should be buyers, but you have to be careful because you can't be aggressive buyers. Like, I don't want to see Franklin Arias, for example, going out the door for a rental because you're not that kind of team this year. You're not a one batter away from being in the ALCS. You're one batter away from, you know, maybe being at least a solid wildcard team as opposed to a maybe wildcard team.
Right.
But you're a good 2-3 hitters away from really being anything serious because let's say you go get one big bat to put in the lineup, right? Okay. If you run into the Yankees or Rays in the ALDS, you're not going to get past them. You're not better than those teams with just one bat. So they're going to need more. And I don't think Breslow, frankly, has the stones to do anything bold. I don't know if I want him doing anything bold because I have major trust issues with him. So they should be buyers, but it's got to be the right kind of move. Like, it can't be a lateral move either, and that's why you can't trade Jaren Duran, because if you trade Jaren Duran for, you know, whatever, Joe Ryan, right, that's a lateral move. Because yeah, okay, your pitching gets better, your pitching's already really good, I don't think you need him, but your offense gets significantly worse. So if anything, I'd like to see them make an easy trade, like go get a middle reliever, right? Go get an upgrade over Greg Weissert. I know he pitched well tonight, but we all know that arsonist. He can go right back out there tomorrow and give up a grand slam. That's an easy move you can do without breaking your farm system or taking away from your major league roster. You can go get a middle reliever from the Marlins for some low-level minor leaguer you'll never hear from again. So I think they got to do smaller moves like that because I don't think they have the big move in them. And it's just they are so far away from being a true, you know, World Series contender that you're not going to be able to do that in one trade deadline. It's going to take, you know, a whole nother offseason and drafting, developing, all of that. So go make a small move, something like that, you know, and at least get yourself in the wild card race. That they can definitely do.
When Roman Anthony does come back, and perhaps it could be a while, you know, we now know he does have a slight tear after a lot of fibbing and Sam Kennedy-ing, if that could be a term. But where do you put him? I think he has to DH. I don't think you mess with that outfield. I mean, and you can say what you want about Duran being somewhat inconsistent, even during this white hot run. He has not been inconsistent with his outfield defense. He is playing defense at an elite level, and quite frankly, a level that I don't think Anthony is capable of playing at, despite being mostly adequate. No, so where do you put him?
Has to be DH.
I mean, there's another avenue here which definitely will take away from our defense, but it's moving Sadon to the infield and then making room for the other outfielders. It's always been an option on the table. They did it a lot over the years. I don't love it, but, I mean, our infield is struggling, right? Whether it be IKF at times. I know he's been hot in May, but I don't think we believe that's the legitimate run for him. Mayer does not look like a major league hitter right now. If you're talking about the rest of the lineup, 1 through 8, doing their thing, then you can kind of bury him at shortstop as long as he's continuing to play good defense. But, you know, maybe Mayer ends up getting sent down and we try Sadon in shortstop for a little bit, and that's how we make room for that extra outfielder.
I think you only bring Sadon into the infield, though, if you have a surefire DH that has to be in there every day, which we don't have.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, that guy would be Roman Anthony. Like, I think he should be your perma DH, and the outfield combination of Duran, Rafaela, Abreu should stay that way. The issue is that, you know, as Matt pointed out, like, Marcelo Meyer's giving you nothing. I mean, if anyone ever had the golden chance to kind of stick it to Breslow and stick it to, I know he's not here anymore, but Alex Cora, and say, like, I should be the future shortstop of this team, Marcelo Meyer had the golden opportunity with Trevor Story's injury, and I'm not seeing it. I mean, I feel like every at bat he's a little overmatched. Defensively, yeah, he's great, but the bat's not there. And Durbin is kind of slowly turning it around, but I don't know if he's ever going to fully get back to what he was. IKF is IKF. You know what you're going to get out of him. People won't want to hear this, but the idea of moving Sadon to the infield kind of makes sense, because then you get Yoshida more at bats. Yoshida's hitting better than Meyer, Durbin, or IKF right now. It's not great. It's not always consistent, but he is hitting pretty well. So they might do it if that was the new combination, right? If they really wanted to get Yoshida in there as the permanent DH, have Anthony play a little bit of the outfield, something like that. But it's tough. I mean, either way, like you said, if you move Sadon to the infield, you are sacrificing outfield defense, because now you're putting Duran in center, which is fine. He's okay there, but you're putting Anthony in left, and we've seen that defensively he's a little bit shaky at times. So it's going to be a tough call for them to make.
Yeah, I hate pulling Sadon out of the outfield, out of his Gold Glove position, but it is without a doubt the best offensive lineup that we can put out as him in the infield. Sure.
I want to make an observation here. You know, we heated up with that Royal series, and then we started hearing chatter, mostly from Kennedy and perhaps Breslow, that they were aggressively seeking a right-handed upgrade in the lineup to bolster the team. And that coincided with Duran's, the start of his surge. Like, maybe since he has trade value, he's going to be the guy we ship. And then we started losing again. And now Breslow's on the hot seat. And I wonder if part of him being on the hot seat was he just botched another round of negotiations where he was unable to get that hitter. I don't know if those dots connect. I mean, I'm making the case for it, but he's taking shots from everyone. Like, I've never seen like an obvious inevitable firing ever before. And we're all Heim Bloom survivors. Only Jason and I were on the podcast at the time, but I remember there was a lot of anxiety as September hit. Like, are they going to fire him or not? And I'm talking about Bloom. Are they going to do it? And Jason, you were like, well, I wouldn't be shocked if they extend him, you know? And I mean, it was plausible. That was those thoughts in my head were a source of anxiety. And they did ultimately fire him. We all took a deep breath. We thought the misery was over. not even halfway over, as it turned out. But but it's inevitable now. Like Ortiz saying, yeah, John Henry is worried. Like when those things are getting leaked, it's time to rip the Band-Aid off. And nobody's steering the ship right now. It's hit like four icebergs. Nobody's steering it. And, you know, so I don't know. But
do we think that Craig is going to try to pull off a Hail Mary? Because, you know, it's weird. If they need to contend for him to keep his job, and they're not going to contend unless he makes a move. So he's got to be, they say they're working harder than ever, but what does that really mean? I mean, who do we really think he's calling? I think there's one interesting option out there that nobody talks about, but if I'm Craig, I'm definitely calling up the Mets and seeing what's up with Bo Bichette. I know he struggled with the Mets, but so have they. And that is the right-handed bat. He has the same type of contract that Bregman had where, I mean, let's face it, he's probably not going to opt out with the way he's been performing this year. But, you know, maybe the Mets, they've been known to flip some of those weird short-term high AAV deals, i.e. Verlander and Scherzer over the last few years, just to get a prospect. So, you know, maybe we can flip them a double A or some prospect not in our top 10, but we would have to absorb that contract. But I still think a guy like Bichette fits right in. And there's a guy that can hit at Fenway Park. But, you know, obviously the Mets are the Mets, and who knows what they're up to. But if I'm Craig, I'm definitely giving them a call and seeing what it might take to bring him over.
Yeah, having Craig, like, in a position feeling like he needs to make a move or lose his job makes me very nervous, because I don't trust him making a good move. And if he's just going to throw a dart at the wall type of move, he could end up, you know, screwing us on his way out the door.
Yeah, that's the scary part. I agree with Doug. Like, you know, Breslow, he knows, like, his ass is on the line. And look, when you've got Theo distancing himself from you, who recommended you for the job, and now he's saying that he's disappointed in your performance publicly, that's pretty bad. And then the only thing that makes it worse is when the newspaper that your owner controls is putting out a piece about David Ortiz saying, yeah, the owner's worried. Like, that's pretty much, that's it. Yeah, you're done for at that point. So it does make me very nervous that he's going to try, like you said, for a Hail Mary. I like the idea of Bo Bichette, but I hate the idea of Breslow trying to do that deal, because I feel like he would get swindled if he actually pulls it off. There was that kind of funny rumor about Mike Trout a couple weeks ago, right? That, you know, someone heard from Brown checkmark source that Mike Trout might be coming to Boston. Like, I wouldn't want that. I'd prefer someone like Bo Bichette. But yeah, that's the scary part. When you put your president of baseball operations basically on the chopping block publicly, and your team is struggling and you need help and you need to make trades, that's what makes it very tricky, because now he might just be sitting there going, well, they're going to fire me anyway. So you know what? I'm going to, yeah, like you said, go for the Hail Mary, because if it fails, they were going to fire me anyway. If it works, then maybe it's a stay of execution. Who knows? So very scary thought going, as we, you know, trade deadline is still a ways away, but it's trades are going to start happening pretty soon. We're into June now. Teams are getting desperate. Teams that, you know, are kind of on the bubble are going to want to, you know, get that player that they think puts them over, you know, over the top. So it's trade season is going to start happening. And I don't know. I don't trust Breslow to be doing anything with that.
I think if you make that move, you could probably include a Trevor Story. Well, maybe not actually with the opt-outs. I was going to say, if you're taking on potentially $126 million, you might be able to lump a bad contract in there to offset the money. I mean, his value is down, so you're not giving up a premium. Like Franklin Arias, for instance, is not going to be in that trade.
No, I think Arias is off the table for that one, but I think it's maybe a double A or triple A arm that we, you know, not one of our top guys, along with a Sogard or an Eaton, a 4A type of guy that can kind of be a glue or a gap guy for them moving forward, too. It really shouldn't take much, but then again, we don't know what to expect here.
I thought about maybe lumping Meyer in there, but something just tells me I just don't want to do that. I'm just not ready to give up on him. But Bo Bichette does solve some problems. And I've said over and over and over again, there's not many three-year contracts I'm ever going to hate. And, you know, I he's got great numbers at Fenway. It's a familiar place. I don't know if Fenway's as chaotic as Queens is. I mean, New York just sounds like a zoo. In fact, well, Matt, you live there. So I just feel like, you know, Boston's insane and you better perform. But for some reason, I just think he could do it.
And yeah, I'm close to Citi Field. I can go take a ride over, see how he's feeling.
Yeah, Boston, I mean, you can kind of stretch out into the burbs and, you know, kind of take a breather. I mean, you're in New York, you're in a concrete jungle and you better not suck.
No, it's true. I think Boston, the bite isn't what it used to be from this fan base. Like they've gotten a little bit softer. It can be a bit of a hornet's nest, especially when the team is going the way they are. But I think compared to playing for the Mets and playing in that environment, and playing for that owner, I mean, as much as we complain about John Henry, the Mets owner, Cohen's a psycho. So, I mean, I think it would be a good change of scenery for him if that's what he's looking for. And he would be the perfect kind of hitter at Fenway Park. He would really do well in that environment. So I'd be a fan of it, but I just don't want Breslow pulling the strings on that deal. That's all.
So. I'm wondering at this point, Breslow might not be able to make a deal without permission. I feel like he would have
to. I would hope so.
Yeah, I don't think he can. I mean, he could flip IKF and some lower level guys to maybe get a relief arm type thing. I don't think he needs it. But if it's money, or if there's big players getting moved, whether they're on the major league roster or they're big prospects, then you know, I just feel like he would need permission. And it looks like Franklin Arias is probably going to be in a lot of top fives. Pipeline, Baseball America, Keith Law has him second or third, I think. And I don't think there's a move where I would trade him. It would have to be a premium bat with lots of years of control. But the other thing, too, is I'm like, man, we got to ride a roller coaster first 2 years with another young prospect. Like, I'm getting tired of that already, but can't trade him. So,
yeah, it's hard because, I mean, everyone's going to be asking about him. He is your best prospect now. So the two things that other teams are going to ask for is your pitching surplus and guys like Franklin Arias, who, you know, he plays a premium position and he's tearing it up in Double A. So yeah, it's going to be a tricky deadline, whoever is navigating it, whether it's Breslow or whether it's someone else. I hope it's someone else by then, or whether it's Breslow, but he's kind of handcuffed because, as you said, like, I think if he wants to make any deal, he's going to run it up top and run it through everybody, you know, Theo, John Henry, everyone. So, you know, hopefully his hands are a little tied going into the deadline, but we're a ways away from that, unfortunately. Go ahead.
Before you get to the matchups, I meant to do this early. I'm a bad co-host. Do you guys know what Connelly Early's actual government name is? There's no way you guys know this. I thought it
was Connelly.
I feel like I've heard him sort of make these mentions on the cast about a name that didn't make sense, like Charlie or something. I don't know.
No, his government name, there's four names here. I guess, maybe he's got two middle names. His real name is Todd Connelly McNeil Early. Why didn't you just go with Todd? You know, I mean, Connelly, it just doesn't flow. Like
I would definitely pick Connelly over Todd.
You would? You can't shorten Connelly. Like
Todd,
my first name is Terrence, you know, but I go by Terry, you know.
Yeah.
Doug, your name's your name's four letters long, but it's too short, so we have to call you Dougie, you know?
Yeah, but my real name's Douglas.
Oh, true. Yeah, I walked right into that one. But but anyway, I don't know. Just Connolly just doesn't flow. But he's the most badass guy we have. So
I've never been a fan of Todd.
Todd Early? I don't know.
I'm going Connolly as well. Probably
Connolly Early just sounds better.
You could shorten it to Con Man, you know, if you had a reason. Yeah. But
Todd Early, he took his lumps growing up playing baseball, and that's why he changed it. That's really what it comes down to.
Maybe it was a bad take, but I don't know. All right.
Yeah. Well, and then, I mean, Dave O'Brien is already having so much fun with his name. I mean, as soon as he started to give up runs, like, oh, early trouble for Connolly. It's like, Dave. Yeah, good one.
I heard that too. Yeah. That was the Houdini act inning.
Yeah. You know, he's been waiting all day to crack out one of those gems. So, but anyway, so we got game two tomorrow. Same start time, 6:45. It is Chris Bassett going for the Orioles against Peyton Tolley. So, Matt, I'll start with you. How do you feel about tomorrow's matchup?
Yeah, I think, Bassett isn't having a great season, but it's any pitcher looks good against this offense. I expect another low-scoring game. I'm obviously rooting for Tolley. I love when he's on the mound, but it's an interesting matchup. As I said last night, I think we'll have to wait and see what he comes with his pitch selection. Terry, you mentioned that Baltimore is a very prepared lineup, so I expect them to come out sitting heater. And we'll have to see if his stuff is good enough to get past them. I see it being another heartbreaker where he might shove and give us like six innings, two runs or less, but our offense will struggle or potentially a late loss. If we don't get to Bassett early, I just don't see us climbing out of some of these holes that we get ourselves in. So I said it last night, I'll stick with it. Orioles taking it tomorrow.
Yeah, I agree. I just don't I agree with – I think, you know, Tolley's going to pitch fine, but it just won't be enough in the end. And it seems like Alonso will hit a home run tomorrow. He'll be sitting fastball, and, he'll probably hit another one out. And that'll probably be the difference again. You know, it'll probably be another low-scoring game. I believe in Tolley 100%. I just don't believe in the offense and don't believe in the offense at home until they can prove otherwise.
Yeah, I mean that's a good point by Matt. I expect they probably will be prepared, and this is a very dynamic offense, as I said in one of my earlier takes on this show. And I just don't think you can live with fastball sinker. You need off speed. You need to keep them off balance, and it could be one of those starts where he punches out four of the first six batters, five of the first six, and then they're sitting on him. And then what looks to be a six or seven inning outing might be four if you're lucky. So I hope I'm wrong, but they need to mix some stuff in there. And we didn't talk about Garrett Crochet having a setback, but if he comes back and Tolley starts to scuffle, this might be an unpopular opinion. Maybe it's worse than my Todd Early take, but I probably send Tolley down and be like, we're going to figure out some off-speed stuff. And you're a talented guy. It shouldn't take too long to figure it out. But once you do, we'll call you back up. So we'll see. But I'm skeptical that tomorrow's going to be a good start for him.
Yeah, I agree. I think your point about, you know, Tolley's going to come out of the gates firing, as he always does. But then I think Baltimore is going to kind of settle in and figure it out. You know, they've got a pretty good hitting program over there. They know what they're doing. They've got some smart hitters in that lineup. So, yeah, they're just going to sit. They're going to sit on the fastball, sit on the off-speed, and I think they'll eventually get to him. I don't think he's going to get lit up necessarily, but, again, it, you know, as Matt mentioned, he might just give up two runs, and that might be enough. Chris Bassett, as you said, hasn't had a good season, but pitches well against the Red Sox. You know, he's got a – and pitches well at Fenway, too. He's got a career, you know, sub-4 ERA at Fenway. So knows how to pitch in that ballpark, knows how to pitch against this team. Kind of a, you know, sly veteran kind of guy. Nothing overpowering, but I think he's going to get the Red Sox hitters off balance, and that'll probably be enough. So, yeah, I just don't trust the offense to get to him and to provide enough run support. So I think we're going to look at another kind of one run, two run loss that we, you know, we hop on the air afterwards and say, well, that's another game that you could have won, but the offense just didn't pull through. So not feeling super confident either. So either way, we will be back on the air after tomorrow night's game. So be sure to tune in with us, and love having you, all you guys in the chat interacting. It's a lot of fun. Hopefully Red Sox can pull off a win so that it's even more fun, but we'll see. So until then, everyone.